Chairman Bizzle, this is Laura. So Steve is going to transition. It might just take a minute.
Okay, good. Thank you. Dead air scares me.
Exactly.
Hey, this is Steve Poland. Does everyone see the presentation?
Yes, sir.
All right, and I'll turn my camera on so you can see me while I speak. I feel like I need to bring one of my deer heads or a turkey fan down. So. All right, well, good morning. Steve Poland with the director's office. This was a presentation that I was supposed to give to the commission back in February, but due to rain, freezing rain and sleet, I got bumped from the agenda. So real quick, just to refresh everyone's memory on why you're receiving this presentation today, back at the August 2019 commission meeting, the commission directed staff to put together an information paper on the science supporting the use of circle hooks and bent bar treble hooks and provide some input and commentary on the efficacy of requiring their use in North Carolina waters. So in response, the division put together an internal work group of experienced individuals that have experience in the recreational fishery, as well as enforcement, public outreach, and just the general science around circle hooks and terminal tackle. So today, the presentation will follow very closely with the information paper that was provided in your briefing materials. I'll go over the background of the issue, of the review of the literature supporting circle hooks and the comparative literature comparing circle hooks to other types of gears and the effects that they can have on discard mortality, fish survival as such. Talk a little bit about what is a circle hook and current management of circle hooks, and I'll get into a little bit of detail on some of the management considerations for all of you to consider when discussing, when debating this issue and deciding if you would like to move forward with any action on circle hooks. So diving into the literature, you know, everyone is already fairly familiar, especially if you fish with circle hooks and kind of what they can and can't do. But you know, really from a scientific perspective, you know, the hypothesis behind using a circle hook is, you know, does reducing deep hooking and hooking injury increase the survival of discarded fish? And it really looks at the hook style and how that hook can interact with the fish. Advance the slide. And generally, the science and management has supported that, yes, circle hooks and barbless hooks do lower the occurrence of deep hooking and can reduce damage in species where it has been studied. Everyone is probably familiar with the circle hook requirements for HMS species, billfish, as well as our current red drum management requirement of circle hooks in certain areas during certain times. So the science has shown that it can work, and it has been implemented into management strategies, not only at the state level, but at the federal level. So real quick, this is a diagram that's I borrowed from the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources, and it really shows how a circle hook works and how a circle hook can be effective at reducing deep hooking. Let me turn my pointer on. Can everyone see my pointer? So basically, you know, a circle hook is typically fished with a live bait or some type of natural bait, either natural or synthetic. And it's fished in more of a Carolina rig style or more of a dead bait style where it's, you know, just bait soaking on the bottom or slowly drifting. So fish would pick up that bait and swallow it. And if the fish swallowed the hook and the bait past the esophagus right here, the esophageal sphincter, Because of the orientation of the barb, when pressure is applied, most of the time it pulls out. It pulls out of the throat. And then as the fish swims off, that hook just naturally, based on its shape, orients itself typically to the corner of the mouth and then rotates around and hooks as that fish, you know, either swims off or slight pressure is applied to the line. The circle hooks have been around for millennia, but really in modern fishing, it really kind of caught on over in the Pacific in the 60s and 70s by the commercial longlining fleet out there as a way to increase catch rates and retentions of fish on those long lines. So as a hook style for using dead bait and increasing successful harvest, and not necessarily increasing hookup or increasing catch rates, but at least increasing actually landing the fish, it is a proven gear type. So again, looking in the literature generally supports the use of circle hooks in reducing hooking injury. And there's really two ways that this research has been conducted to experimentally evaluate if hooks are effective or not. The first is observational studies, and this is typically where you capture a fish, like this dolphin fish right here, with either a circle hook or J hook, and throw it in a tank and observe it for a certain amount of time. And this gives you information on that instantaneous rate of mortality of that fish. So, does the direct act of the hook and landing it, does it harm that fish in the short term? Or another study or type of method is tagging. So, again, you go out and fish multiple styles of hooks, whatever your research objectives are. If you're wanting to compare, multiple styles of circle hooks or circle hooks compared to J hooks, you'll go out, you'll catch a bunch of fish with those different styles, tag them and release them. And then based off of the number of tags that are returned, you can infer more long-term survival on those fish. And this allows researchers to account not only for that short-term trauma of hooking and landing the fish, but kind of long-term mortality or delayed mortality that can occur based off of things like handling time or increased risk of predation. And these are typically the two methods that you see in the literature when evaluating hook performance relative to fish survival. And the general consensus in the literature is that, yes, circle hooks, they do reduce deep hooking in a lot of fish, and they can increase survival of discarded fish. This is just a kind of a random smattering of some of the more higher impact articles, but the literature is full of articles worldwide that have evaluated these hooks. But I will say a lot of that literature is either focused on the offshore marine world, so offshore pelagics, or in freshwater systems, like trout and largemouth bass and that kind of stuff. As far as estuarine species, the typical species that we manage, the research is kind of hasn't caught up yet to the number of studies that have been conducted on some of these other species. But there is some research on things like red drum and speckled trout and striped bass. Generally, out of the literature review, some major or typical caveats come up as far as the effectiveness or what affects, circle hooks. The first is, mouth morphology, behavior of the fish, any type of, physiological differences in the fish that can change how effective a circle hook is. And this is really at a species by species basis. Next, there's a pretty general consensus out there in the literature that offset circle hooks negate the benefits of circle hooks. And in a few slides, I'll walk through the morphology of a hook and go into a little bit more detail on what an offset hook is. But basically, it's either the hook is in the same plane as the shank, or it's bent to one side or the other. And that bend can affect the effectiveness. A seminal paper back in 2004, Cook and Siski, they looked at all the literature related to hook trauma up to that point kind of evaluated the literature, the veracity of the literature, and then had some commentary on management implications. And one of the recommendations that came out of that paper is to evaluate the benefits on a species-by-species level. And this is due to the earlier caveats that I mentioned as far as, you know, different feeding behaviors and mouth morphology, just different ways that fisheries may fish. And as far as that recommendation, only the red drum fishery in North Carolina has been fully studied as far as, you know, comparing different styles of hooks to one another to evaluate the, you know, deep hooking and release mortality. There have been other one-off studies that have looked at different aspects of this in the state, and the division has done some work in the past on trying to estimate discord mortality on some species, but by and large, the red drum fishery is probably the best characterized in the state. And one thing that really stuck out in the lit review was that there are not a lot of studies evaluating treble hooks and evaluating treble hooks on the basis of hook trauma leading to discord mortality, or even comparing the effectiveness of treble hooks to J hooks or circle hooks. There were a couple studies done out of Texas that we go into a little bit of detail in the information paper about, but those studies were kind of inconclusive or incomplete because they didn't compare the whole range of hooks with treble hooks. And for one of those studies, actually saw that there was a decrease in deep hooking when using treble hooks compared to J hooks and circle hooks. But you know, this can make sense when most treble hooks are fished on hard baits. So it's a lot harder for a fish to, you know, swallow that hook. But as far as, you know, evaluating the trauma or the dead discards, those studies, there just aren't a lot of studies out there currently on treble hooks. So, kind of moving on into, you know, management considerations, you know, or just in general, you know, just definitions of circle hooks is, you know, basically what is a circle hook? And there's a lot of definitions out there on what circle hooks are. There is no industry standard on circle hooks. They can come in a wide range of sizes, orientations. Some, you know, can comply with some of these definitions from management agencies as far as the point pointing perpendicular back to the shank. But there are circle hooks out on the market right now where this point is either, you know, pointed, you know, more or pointed less back to the shank, that they are sold and packaged and labeled as circle hooks, but currently do not comply with just some of the circle hook definitions that are out there in regulation right now. Unfortunately, since we're meeting over webinar, if we were going to meet in person, I would have had examples of this that, you know, would have been able to hand out and an information board highlighting this. And again, there are numerous styles of circle hooks out there relative to offsetness. And again, I described it earlier, but an offset circle hook is either, or an offset circle hook is where the point is not in the same plane as the shank. And because of the research that has suggested that offsetting a circle hook negates the positive benefits of a circle hook, a lot of management agencies have specifically required that circle hooks must be in line, but these offset circle hooks are still available on the market. And does size matter on circle hook? Certainly, sizes of hooks can affect how a fish manipulates those hooks in their mouth and if the hooks are swallowed or not. I mean, obviously, a very small hook can very easily be swallowed compared to a large hook. But there is no standardization in size in the market. Here in this picture, these are four different hook styles, all packaged and sold as 4-aught size. And you can see the difference in not only the length of the hook or the length of the shaft, but also differences in the gap. And these are from three different manufacturers. So we have Eagle Claw, Mustad, and Owner. And then even within manufacturers, there's no consistency in size. This last hook on the right is also an Eagle Claw, but is a different style. And you can see it is vastly different than the first Eagle Claw style of hook. So this is just to, showcase that, hooks and hook manufacturers, do not standardize the size of the hooks and do not, work with other manufacturers to kind of match those styles. So there are some examples of current circle hook management or hook requirements in other jurisdictions. The Atlantic States Marine Fishery Commission currently requires the use of non-offset corrodible hooks when fishing for sharks, and also circle hooks when targeting striped bass in the ocean. And this is something that North Carolina has to comply with. These were recently passed by ASMSC, I think, back in November of 2019, and the implementation dates for both of these requirements are 2020. I think shark is by July 1st and striped bass is by the end of the year. So North Carolina already has to implement circle hook requirements for these two species through our interstate management of those species. South Atlantic Fishery Management Council, we require the use of circle hooks when you're in possession of snapper grouper species in the South Atlantic, and we've recently modified these regulations to require the use of descending devices as well as having non-offset circle hooks when fishing for and possessing those species. And this is to address other aspects of fishing trauma that can lead to higher rates of discoid mortality, typically in these species. So this is an example where not only circle hooks are used, but other techniques we're trying to apply to reduce the likelihood of dead discards in that fishery. The North Carolina Wildlife Resources Commission, they restrict use of multiple hooks and barbed hooks in the Roanoke River during certain times of the year. And I think it's typically after the striped bass spawning period in the Roanoke, and certainly Pete Carnegie probably can go into a lot more detail than I can on this. But this is basically a conservation action to reduce dead discards in that fishery during the summer. Late spring and summer, the water temperatures rise, and angling and discards can contribute to high rates of mortality in that fishery. So the WRC, took action to try to mitigate that by requiring only single barbless hooks. And then you yourselves, the Marine Fisheries Commission, currently in rule require the use of circle hooks in Pamlico Sound for red drum. And that's specifically Rule 15A NCAC 03J 0306. This rule is commonly referred to as the Red Drum Rule or the Owen Lupton Rig. And this rule was established back, I think, in the second Red Drum FMP based off of research done in Pamlico Sound that was specifically evaluating not only hook size and hook style, but also, you know, leader style and fishing style to try to reduce deep hooking and dead discards in that red drum fishery. And if you're not familiar with the red drum rule, basically it requires at least a 2 ounce sinker of some sort with a short leader, no more than 6 inches, a circle hook larger than 4-aught with a compressed barb. And this particular configuration was shown in research to reduce the incidence of deep hooking in those red drum. All right, so that's kind of a general summary of all the available science on circle hooks and some of the current management strategies for circle hooks. And now I'll get into the management considerations. And again, these are detailed in the information paper that was provided. I will not go into great detail just on the sake of brevity, but the information paper does have quite a bit of commentary on these five considerations for the commission to consider when they're debating if you all want to move forward with modifying hook management in the state. So the first, we'll get into enforceability. Currently, we do have a definition in rule of what a circle hook is, and that is in that red drum rule. And it does specify that it be a non-offset circle hook, but it also specifies that that hook be barbless and that it be a 4-aught or greater size. Marine Patrol has raised concerns with this definition, mostly with the fact that the size is in rule and is defined in rule because hooks are not standardized within the industry. It becomes very difficult in court, according to Marine Patrol, to argue if a violation took place because those hook sizes are vastly different among and within manufacturers. And by having that hook size requirement in the rule, they feel like it makes the rule more difficult to enforce. So moving forward, if you all decide to modify our current hook management, this is something to consider. Should the definition be evaluated based off of enforceability, and should the current definition be modified and retooled to ensure that enforcement can occur of current or potential rules? And again, if the commission so decides to move forward with hook requirements based off of size, are there other measurements or other ways to measure those hooks that would provide more of a discrete, black and white, yes or no regulation for Marine Patrol to enforce? For example, is there a specific gap measurement? And the gap as far as the point of the hook to the shank, is there a particular size that you all feel like needs to be kind of like a minimum? How that gap size can affect the effectiveness of circle hooks. A larger gap allows for, basically larger fish to be hooked effectively by that hook. And a smaller gap may reduce the effectiveness on hooking some species of fish or some sizes of fish. So that has to be weighed with the fisherman satisfaction, as you will, or weighed with concerns with affecting catch rate in those fish. And also, there's not a lot of the literature out there right now that has specifically evaluated what those discrete measurements on a hook, how do they affect the use of circle hooks and their effectiveness. And lastly, natural bait. Most circle hooks, as I mentioned, are fished, with natural bait, either a live bait or dead bait, and currently we do not have a definition of natural bait in rules. So potentially moving forward with any new rules, natural bait would need to be defined, and it comes down to how broad of the definition, you know, do you want. You know, obviously, you know, live and dead natural bait is pretty easy to identify, but what about synthetic baits? Things like gulp and fish bites and others, you know, they typically mimic live bait and can be fished in the same style as live bait. And do you, as the rulemaking body, you know, want to include that or exclude that? And depending on, you know, inclusion or exclusion can also affect not only the enforceability, but the effectiveness or the perceived conservation benefits of any new requirements. Next is gear availability. Are circle hooks readily available? Absolutely. You go to any tackle shop and you will be overwhelmed by the different sizes and styles of circle hooks. But do they comply with current or any future, you know, requirements? And that just really depends on, you know, what a potential rule, you know, might include or exclude. And again, there is inconsistency within the industry as far as style and size. And if rules contain, you know, some type of discrete measurement, either gaff or shank length or something else, these measurements aren't typically printed on the packages. Certainly if it's a requirement, you know, eventually the industry might adapt and publish that, but, you know, there's no, you know, requirement that they, you know, do. And it would be up to the individual to make sure that their hooks are compliant. And again, barbless treble hooks, they are available, but they're not out there in the same, you know, number and quantity and style as circle hooks. So the question then leads to, is it appropriate for anglers to modify the hook? And that's another thing to consider. And also, are there alternatives to treble hooks and barbless treble hooks, like inline alternatives? There is a growing number of conservationally minded lure manufacturers that are voluntarily switching over either some or all of their product to inline J hooks as opposed to treble hooks on a lot of their hard baits and that kind of stuff. And there's also national initiatives funded by a whole host of different recreational organizations that actually fund you know, hook replacement. Basically, they have these big events where you can bring by, you know, typically up to, from what I've seen, up to five of your, you know, stick baits, and, you know, they'll switch them out free of charge. And this is just to promote, you know, the expected conservation benefit of switching from treble hooks to inline hooks. So, you know, is that an option? Next are management considerations. Are there any fisheries that need to be excluded from the circle hook requirements? I mentioned earlier that, you know, mouth morphology and fish behavior can affect how well these circle hooks work. So are there any fisheries in North Carolina that, you know, potentially need to be excluded from any circle hook requirements based, off of a mouth morphology, something like a sheep's head where they have heavy dentition and typically require a very forceful hook set on the angler's part to, you know, really bury a hook into the mandible of that fish, and would a circle hook requirement preclude that? Feeding behavior, you know, something like a flounder that typically just kind of sits and waits for bait to either swim by or slowly creeps up on the bait and swallows it and then sets. So there's no active movement of that fish to hook itself with the circle hook. So, you know, would that be affected? And does that need to be considered? And, you know, fishing technique, trolling techniques, is it fair to require active fisheries like troll fisheries to use circle hooks, where typically you know, baits are dragged along at a certain speed, and you know, J hooks are really effective because the fish will strike, and then either based off of the drag on the reel or the drag on the outrigger, if you're fishing outriggers, set the fish themselves. And this style doesn't really lend to circle hooks. It does work in the billfish fishery, just because a lot of times in billfishing, you know, you run your J hooks, you know, on lures, but anything with dead bait, it's typically a bait that you pitch to a fish. So you pitch it to the fish, slack line, the fish picks it up and turns and hooks itself. You know, that's why it was shown to be effective in those fisheries. But in all trolling fisheries and all kind of lure configurations, it might not be as effective. So that's another exclusion to consider. Education. So studies have shown that fish handling and angler inexperience can lead to post-release mortality. This particular study, Stunson McKee, was conducted in Texas and actually showed that fish handling and angler inexperience contributed more towards discards or dead discards than hook style or anything else. So, you know, not only does the type of tackle that you're using affect the survival of discarded fish, but also the way that you're handling those fish and the way that you're fishing for those fish. So any change in terminal tackle requirements should probably be rolled out with a pretty extensive education campaign to educate anglers who aren't currently using those styles of hooks or style of tackle to educate them on how to properly use them. And the division has a whole host of public outreach and public education materials that we currently try to educate members of the public on, as far as ethical angling techniques, the use of fishing hooks. In our current recreational coastal digest, there is an article in there on circle hooks and how to effectively use circle hooks. The division is also partners with a lot of national organizations in handing out either, as I mentioned earlier, these inline J hooks to replace treble hooks on hard baits, as well as red drum compliant leaders and rigs for red drum fishing. But any change in these requirements, probably if we want to ensure compliance and effectiveness, need to be accompanied with a very good public outreach campaign just to get the word out. And then finally, conservation benefits. I mean, the conservation benefits of reducing dead discards is obvious. I mean, you know, yes, you release a fish, you know, you practice catch and release fishing with the expectation that releasing that fish is saving that fish from a mortality so it can be caught again, reproduce again. But if the actual act of catching and releasing the fish is leading to the mortality of that fish, then obviously, you know, the conservation benefit is diminished. So any changes to how that fish is handled and caught to increase the likelihood of survival is an obvious conservation benefit. However, it is very difficult to quantify in a fishery science a population dynamics perspective. You know, without direct measures of compliance or current hook use, it will be difficult to incorporate these direct benefits into stock assessments, and it would probably require subsequent stock assessments to see if this change in fishing behavior actually contributed to an increase in the stock size. And this is just because, you know, if we don't have a measure of, you know, compliance with how many people are actually using them and using them effectively, it's going to be hard to incorporate that as a benefit directly into an assessment. There's still some research and monitoring that needs to occur. Research as far as what different styles of hooks are effective for, the different fisheries that we have. As I mentioned earlier, the red drum fishery has been very well characterized as far as the effectiveness of circle hooks compared to J hooks in that dead bait fishery. But some of our other fisheries haven't been characterized. So there's still an ongoing need for research. And this isn't to say that, no action need to be taken one way or another, regardless of if the research is there or not. But this just underscores the fact that, again, the conservation benefits may not be able to or may not be directly noticeable or be able to be directly accounted for in assessments until that body of research is built. Also, if a requirement on hook size or a particular discrete, measurement of hook size, like a gape size, is implemented, there's no information out there on what gape sizes are appropriate for certain species. So, that's another area where research would be needed to effectively inform what that gape size should be. And, again, monitoring, how many people are actually doing this, and this would require some type of a compliance survey. And lastly, this really just emphasizes the species by species evaluation through the FNP process. Through the FNP process, it allows a lot of these questions to be evaluated and answered, or at least those data gaps and research needs to be identified. And again, this doesn't preclude action outside of a fishery management plan, but a fishery management plan could allow the opportunity to really fine-tune and tailor any hook requirements or changes in fishing style to those species. And it'll also help identify, what are the conservation needs and what benefits could modifying hook requirements lead to. And not only hook requirements, are there other things that could be modified in the fishery to reduce dead discards? I used the example earlier in the snapper grouper fishery. A big issue in that fishery are dead discards due to barotrauma or fish being brought up from depth and experiencing that trauma of just coming from 200 feet down up all those atmospheres. And a management response to that was not only circle hooks, but to require descending devices. So to require anglers to either, with a descending device, drop those fish back down to depth, or, using a venting tool to release that pressure so the fish can drop down to depth. So there are other avenues to explore if reducing dead discards is a concern. So I know that was kind of long. There's a lot of information to go over, so I apologize. I'm ready for any questions.
Okay, Steve, thank you for that presentation. You really covered a lot of good material. Do want to mention something about trolling. Any tournament that targets highly migratory species is required to use circle hooks if using natural bait. So use menhaden, ballyhoo, either for pitch bait or for trolling, or a Cuban bridle rig on a small bonita or something like that. You do have to use a circle hook, and they don't even say what size, just a circle hook, period. Non-offset, and they don't mention one that will corrode, but I think that's what everybody's using, just for a little clarification there. Questions and comments? Yeah, go ahead. Who we got? Questions or comments of Steve? Doug, is that your hand up? Need to unmute yourself if it is.
Doug Cross, when we start considering these different rules and regulations, I mean, he's got a very good point. Each species is almost going to be a size-specific type hook. You know, you can look at the inner fishing areas for where you're catching speckled trout, and you're going to get puppy drum, and you're going to get small flounder. You know, there's going to be a lot of in-depth analysis needed to specifically get us the correct sizes on that. And, you know, I would leave it to the recreational guys on the commission to try to come up with some guidelines and try to work with them. I would recommend a FMP to get these different sizes established and stuff like that. But ultimately, when it boils down to it, I mean, I probably trout fish as much as any of you, but, and I can tell you a treble's destructive. I mean, that's what we've always used, but I mean, if we can find the right size circle hooks that work with these inner shore species, then I think it's a excellent thing. But I would remind everybody when we're looking at this that you're tinkering with a lot of dollars in the industry. So far as the recreational side, these manufacturers of hooks, rigs, even the soft baits and the hard baits, I mean, you know, you're talking a lot of dollars so far as having to adapt and go to it. So I would encourage you when you're looking at coming down with some of these specifications and some of these different rules to bear that in mind and give timetables involved if we do decide to go this route that would work within the manufacturing process and with the gear modification process for most of the anglers. Thank you.
And that's a good observation, Doug. But remember, what if we do anything today, and staff, correct me if I'm wrong, what we are going to do is adopt language for rulemaking to be sent out to the public for comment and then return back to us to actually begin the rulemaking process if all the boxes get checked. Am I right on that?
Hey, sorry, can everyone hear me? I was disconnected for a second. I apologize if there was a question asked, I missed it.
You're back good. What I was asking staff was that what we would be doing today, since this is going to have to be a rule, is that we would be adopting language for to be sent out to the public for public comment, to be returned to the commission with their comments and suggestions to vote on beginning the rulemaking process. Am I right on that? Anybody, Sean, who have you, can chime in if you want to, please.
Hey, this is Steve Paul, and I'll let Catherine Bloom handle that question. She can certainly articulate it a little better than I can. She's on.
Okay.
Yes, sir, can you hear me okay?
Yes, ma'am.
All right. Yes, if the commission would like to take any kind of action today, it would be to provide guidance to the staff so that we could develop rule language that we would then bring back to you in the form of turning Steve's paper into an issue paper to show proposed rule changes and various options. And once we got that from the commission, then we'd be in a position to develop the fiscal analysis that's required to be developed and approved by the Office of State Budget and Management. Then we would have that approved fiscal note and the proposed rules to bring to the commission to begin the rulemaking process. It is during that time that the Administrative Procedure Act builds in the public comment period. The commission could certainly request input from the public prior to that by way of your advisory committees.
Thank you, Catherine. I know your job gives you a headache. it's very involved. So this is whatever we do here today, if anything, is the beginning of a long process with opportunities to modify what we do today or stick with it or what have you. But it's a year and a half process before a rule does finally get adopted, if any, if one does. Any other questions, comments, motions, anything?
I have a quick question. This is Martin Posey.
Yes, Martin.
Steve, thank you for a great presentation. Early on in the presentation, you mentioned that the Atlantic States Commission had adopted requirements for circle hook for striped bass and also sharks, and that we had to be in compliance by July. Does the Marine Fisheries Commission need to take any further action for us to become in compliance?
No, Director Murphy will issue a proclamation probably before the July 1 deadline to implement that. And Chris Bassavage is on the line if there's anything that I kind of miss or misconstrue. But yes, so for the sharks, it'll have to be implemented by July 1. And then for striped bass, that's only ocean striped bass. That doesn't affect the estuarine striped bass. But both of those will be implemented through proclamation.
Okay, so the compliance will come through proclamation. You don't need an MSC action.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah, Commissioner.
Thank you.
You're right. Thank you, Martin. Any other questions, comments, motions, anything?
Rob.
Yes.
This is Pete.
Yeah, Pete.
I've got extensive experience with circle hooks on striped bass on the Roanoke River. And I can tell you from my experience that it took 2 or 3 years to really convince the anglers up there, and it's a big natural bait fishery up there, that circle hooks were the way to go. But now I would say that probably a majority of the fishermen, conservation-minded fishermen, are using circle hooks because they've seen the benefits on stripers. The rule that we had up there only said that you had to bend the barb down on the hook. But what we did is started a huge education program, and Eagle Claw and Mustad donated thousands of circle hooks to us, and we distributed those to the fishermen up there. And like I say, it only took a couple of years before it was pretty much accepted that's the way to fish with natural bait. I think the science is very clear on this. And as a matter of fact, I think the tackle manufacturers are probably light years ahead of the fishermen on this right now. They're waiting for the fishermen to catch up on circle hooks and barbless hooks and non-offset hooks. So I've got a motion that I have forwarded to Patricia.
Okay, Patricia, can you put that up for us, Pete's motion?
Hi, Chairman Bizzle, this is Laura.
Yes.
So Patricia's just, we're passing the ball to her so she can present, and once she has it on her screen, she'll share her screen with us, so it might take a second.
Okay, that's fine. I'm going to take us a short break right after we deal with this. And,
okay. All right, here it comes.
That's down the list.
Patricia, can you expand your screen? And Pete, once she gets it up, can you just review it and make sure that it's what you wanted up?
Yes, absolutely.
Thank you.
And this is to provide and Catherine, make sure I got it right, provide guidance to the staff to develop an issue paper in regards to, with these considerations in mind. Is that pretty much it, Catherine?
Yes, sir. This is Catherine. Yes.
Okay, great. Thank you. Hey, Pete, we might want to modify that a little bit.
Did I get it?
Yeah, we got it in front of us now.
Okay. All right.
Thank you, Patricia.
Yeah, thank you. And we might want to, Pete, you might want to modify this to, as per what Catherine was saying, we need to do to provide, use this language to provide guidance to the staff to develop an issue paper.
Yeah, that language is good with me. If Patricia can change that on the screen.
And you did want the barbs bent down on the circle hooks, did you not? It barbs.
Yes.
I see it. Okay.
Absolutely.
Does that language get it?
Hasn't changed on our screen.
For clarification, does barbless include barbs bent down?
Yes.
Okay. So it's not only barbs absent, barbs bent down is included.
That's true. That's not an enforcement issue the way that we understand it from the wildlife officers.
Sorry, I guess I should. That was Martin speaking.
Thank you, Martin.
Response by Pete.
Right.
You know, we're going through a lot of this stuff, like it was mentioned by earlier that we do not have a definition of natural bait. Well, you know, we all know what natural bait is, but there is no definition of natural bait, and there's a lot of things out there that just don't have a definition that we're finding out as we go along, but we can address that.
That needs to be fixed. This is Pete.
Okay, what part do you want fixed? Where?
He's talking about going forward in the future, I think. Right?
Okay. All right.
Right.
All right. Do you see the updated version now where it says provide guidance to the MSPS?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Does that motion, that change in that motion satisfy you, Pete?
Yes, it does.
And Catherine, does that meet your needs for the process?
This is Catherine Bloom. Mr. Chairman, the first line still says the commission and division to provide guidance to the division staff.
Okay.
And the form of the guidance would be to bring back an issue paper, and that might be more clear, that we would develop an issue paper with the components that are in the motion.
You heard her, Patricia.
Yeah, okay.
So the portion, this is Catherine, the portion that says proceed with rulemaking might be more clear to capture development of an issue paper for rulemaking to require the use of, et cetera.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, sir, Mr. Cross.
Doug Cross. Pete. In your motion, and it's just like what you just said a while ago, it needs to be, we need to address it, but where you said use of, in using natural bait, do you want to add a caveat for just discovery using, perhaps using natural bait and non hard artificial, you know, like a gulp or a Z-Man or something like that? I mean, are we going to consider that going forward, and do you need to add it here?
There again, we don't have a definition of soft bait, and we don't have a definition of natural bait. Natural bait would be more easily defined.
This is Doug Cross again. That's why I was saying non-hard. I don't know if you want. I don't know how to phrase it. I'm just asking the question. You know where I'm coming from.
Right.
Yeah. I think this is something that can be defined and fine-tuned through the process. Because we're going to ask staff to come back with something with us. To me, Gulf and all those are not natural baits. They are man-made baits, not God-made baits.
Commissioner Bissell, this is Steve Poland.
Yes, Steve.
So I appreciate that discussion. I was just going to kind of jump in and say any kind of discussion that the commission can have to kind of better kind of frame, for example, a definition on natural bait or hook size or anything like that to kind of give us, you know, kind of what ballpark are we aiming at? I appreciate that discussion about natural bait, but, you know, I think I heard that it includes, you know, unprocessed baits. I want to be clear on the intent so we can help speed this issue paper along so we don't get bogged down in a lot of the fine details and having to come back constantly. So any further insight that the commission can provide, not only on natural bait or you know, definition of hook size or range or anything like that would be appreciated, and it would certainly help the process.
Yes, I always encourage the commissioners to be part of any sort of process that we're involved with. And I may even need to reach out to get some of the stakeholders involved in this to some degree too. Sam, got a comment?
Sam Romano. I'm just concerned that this is a bit broad sweeping, and I was wondering if we could say for specific species, because, you know, we just heard that both sheephead, I know king mackerel, there's a lot of just circumstances. So if we could add to that maybe two out of larger four specific species while using natural bait, if that's something, that way we can keep room for, you know, the possibility of different species not, you know, that wouldn't really be in congruence with this. What are y'all's thoughts on that?
Well, I think that's something that we can focus down on during the process. I think, you know, there's going to be exception. One broom never sweeps totally clean. And so this is going to be part of the process to see if there just needs to be some exceptions to some species. I use a little bit bigger than a one-aught circle hook for sheep's head and fiddler crabs and do right good with it. But, you know, that may be something we need to look at or something else that we can look at through an FMP.
I just think that if you have two odd or larger, you know, you're pretty much removing all those from the shelves of a lot of tackle shops, and that's their, you know, that's their inventory and would be somewhat of a burden. But if you kept it possible for select species, then you give the ability for them to still be able to sell this rather than just having a bunch of dead inventory on the shelves.
Right. And that was Sam that made that comment, right?
Sorry about it. Yep, Sam.
Okay. I hear you. And I'm, you know, a lot of times you can use like waves on a sheep's head as a jig head, and you can put on there a gulp bait to go after speckled trout. So, but this is part of the process. We're by no means going to have all the answers and the best scenarios for any situation at the beginning of the rulemaking process, which even though we're not officially in the rulemaking process, I consider this part of that process. So we're just saying, these are kind of some of my ideas right now. Staff, what do you think? They come back to us and we ask the public. Okay, any other questions?
Tom Roller, got a couple questions, comments real quick.
Yes, Tom.
You know, in regards to sheep's head, which is one of the most discussed fisheries in terms of using circle hooks, being that it could be a problem, most fishermen I'm aware of, use, including myself, use much smaller hooks than a 2-aught. So unless you're using something like an urchin, I don't really see this as a big issue for the sheep's head fishery, given the minimum size or the, you know, the maximum size, or the size we're talking about here. My only issue, and again, we can talk about this in the process, is just the 2-lot number right here. And that's specifically because a lot of us will actually use jig heads for live bait down here at the coast. You know, as a guide, I fish with a lot of inexperienced anglers. And what I found is, you know, whether you're either tipping a jig head with a natural piece of bait like a squid strip or actually using, say, a live mullet on a jig head, you actually have a lot less deep hooking because fishermen fishing inshore, you know, you have constant contact with that bait, right? When you're Carolina rig fishing or, you know, sort of letting like a Carolina rig sit on the bottom, you're actually not having constant contact with that all the time. Most of the general hooks, the jig heads sit around a 3-aught or a 4-aught even. Most of them are about a 3-aught. That's my only really, really issue with that. But other than that, you know, you go to most of the tackle shops now in discussion of dead inventory, circle hooks have really taken over, the kind of the live bait sort of hooks. You're not seeing a lot of J hooks anymore being used for bait, particularly in the larger sizes. My only comment, you see a lot of offset circle hooks, and I'm not a fan of those because they don't, you know, they kind of defeat the purpose of using a circle. But that being said, I mean, I will second this motion as it's written, but I would, you know, given that we have a lot more to discuss going forward.
Okay, motion was seconded by Tom Roller. Is there any other discussion or comment on this motion?
Mr. Chairman, Mike Blaine.
It's Tom. Yeah, hold on. Got Commissioner Blanton and then I guess Commissioner Henderson. Tom. Mike, you want to go ahead?
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Two things that come to mind as we continue to discuss and the division hopes, you know, would write this down and take note is you know, as we explore options to try to deal with the invasive blue catfish in our estuarine waters, you know, we have an option to use trot lines and jugs and stuff like that. With these big catfish, they're extremely huge creatures, some of them getting to 100 pounds. You know, historically, they've been caught in river systems of up to 100 pounds and lake systems up to 100 pounds. And I would, God forbid, to hate to see that class of fish get into the estuary. But I think it's evident that it's going to happen one day in 20 or 30 years once these huge, you know, fish get up in age class. But as we set trot lines, I think the trend is circle hookish, but I don't know that being a barbless hook would be conducive to setting a commercial trot line to try to cull out some of these, you know, catfish if that were to become the most popular method or, you know, the preferred method in the future of, you know, different fishermen up in the estuaries. And then, so just to take note of that, I'd like to explore a little deeper into the, you know, trot lines and the commercial aspect of that. And then number two is just being a bass fisherman, because I'm like hooked on bass fishing. I'd just soon do that than anything. But, you know, I'm thinking a lot of the hooks I use are not circle hooks when I use soft plastics. You know, and you know, just thinking about what Commissioner Roller just said, you know, you got constant contact with these baits. You know, you can feel that bait, you're actively using that bait. So I'm not sure that, you know, just a blanketed, you know, circle hook in all these waters is gonna sort of satisfy every fishery. And I think we should really be diligently careful about how we you know, go about implementing something like this. So anyway, I just want to get that on the record. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mike. And Tom Hendrickson, and then I see Colonel Witten and Catherine's hands are up. So let's go to Tom Hendrickson first. Tom, did you have something?
I do. Well, just a couple observations. One is, and I think Sam mentioned, and I just would like, I don't need to modify the motion, but would like, when as staff is developing the issue paper, to have us take a species by species review of what would make the most sense. You know, does something that you makes sense for drum, I mean, that's a very different fishery than live bait trolling for king mackerel. And, you know, they both may need it, they both may not. But yeah, the other question, and this is really a question back for Pete, is we can develop the issue paper relative to, and I think with this comment and Sam's, ask staff to evaluate it based on species so that we're not trying to, with a 12-inch roller here, we can actually get a smaller brush and figure out how to make something that's actually going to work for the fishermen, for the resource, et cetera, but also the broad scale, I'm not thing of the removing, bending down barbs on treble hooks. And is the intent here that we're going to, as a commission, ask the staff to say every barb on every treble hook in the water needs to be bent down, or are we trying to target something more specific?
Okay, thank you, Tom. I'm sure staff will take those under consideration. Colonel Witten, did you have something you want to add?
So I have two different things. First thing, same thing as Commissioner Roller was saying. With the motion here, barbs on all treble hooks must be bent down. Are we talking on all? My question is, are we talking on all treble hooks? Any treble hook there's in there, is that barb got to be bent down? So that's one question. The second part to that is the two-aught. As Steve Poland said earlier, when you go out and say an actual two-aught size and nothing is standard in factories right now of a two-aught size, that is enforceability cannot happen when you put a two-aught size to it. We would need a gap size or something to that extent to be able to measure this size, because there's so many different hook companies and everybody saying, you know, this is a two-aught, they're not standard, and that will cause an issue for enforcement down the road. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, your points are well made, Colonel. And I think this is part of what this process is going to be about, is to gear down on what is what and what isn't what. So I know that gap size is going to probably be the sticking point to make this work if this is what we want to do. So yes, I think that's going to need to be a focus of fine-tuning this motion, or the results of this motion. Catherine, did you have something you needed to say?
Yes, sir. I'm sorry for the intrusion. Catherine Bloom here. Just from a process standpoint, because our plates have been so full over the last few years with fishery management plans and rulemaking required for periodic review and other similar things, we actually haven't had the opportunity that this topic affords us in developing this issue paper, bringing it to the commission, and then how we operated a few years back predominantly was the commission would then vet the issues with that issue paper through the advisory committees, the regional and then the pertinent standing committees. And so just from a process standpoint, that may provide the commission input from the public earlier, where the potential rules could still be modified to accommodate that public input before development of the fiscal note. Because once we get to that road, then it's a little bit more rigid to get us going for the rulemaking process. So I thought it was worth mentioning just a refresher of some of the process things that we used to have more time to do. And just the last couple of years, it just hasn't really worked out that way from a time frame standpoint. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Catherine. So what I'm hearing you're suggesting is that before staff really gets going on this, maybe send this out to the ACs for their input on it first. Is that what you're suggesting?
This is Catherine. Just the opposite, sir, that we would take the opportunity with the discussion you've had today and develop that issue paper and bring it back to the commission for your additional input. And then if you, as a body, see that you want some additional input from the public before we get into the fiscal analysis stage, that you would have that opportunity that we really just haven't done it that way in the last few years because we've had so many fishery management plan issues. That is already sort of built in. And so this would be strictly at the commission's discretion. There's not a fishery management plan dictating the process.
I gotcha. Okay. Okay. Thank you very much. Any other questions or discussions on this?
Tom Roller, one couple quick comments. You know, back to Commissioner Blanton's comments, you know, regarding bass fishing and soft plastics, I don't think that will be affected by this. And if it makes you happy, you know, I spent the last week and a half up on the Roanoke River, and tonight I'm eating Roanoke River blue catfish that were caught on barbed wire circle hooks. So, but I would like to hear about, you know, retention in terms of commercial trot lines going forward. I think that is a very, very good comment. And regarding, you know, treble hooks and the barbs bent down, I mean, this is really not that much of a burden. Many of us do this already, and there's, you know, there's lots of incentive, you know, I'd like an incentive to do it. And if anybody would like to see that, I had treble hook removed, surgically cut out of a tendon in my hand last year. So that is as good enough as anything to have a barbless roll on there. So but my point is I don't really think this is a burden to most anglers to be pinching down barbs on treble hooks, you know, particularly on hard baits.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman.
Who is this?
This is Steve Murphy.
Yes, yeah.
Somebody wrangled me a headset, so I'm in better shape now. I think if you would give us some latitude to sort of, you know, work through some of these things in the issue paper that we bring you, you know, we could come up with proxies for the 2-watt or larger by looking at gap size. My guess is that, you know, if we do have a rule in this, Colonel Whitten and his crew will need some sort of tool, quick way to check these kind of things, kind of like we do with, like, you know, whether you got a legal clam or not. I mean, we pick a size and, you know, so something along those lines. So if you would just give us a little bit of latitude to work around some of those things, we'll bring you some options on that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's most in order.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, that sounds like Doug.
That's Doug Cross. If I could offer just a friendly amendment, Pete, to the motion where it says the use of the non-offset circle hooks, if we can take out when hook size is 2-aught or larger and just put in with gap size to be determined, that I think that'll give them a lot of flexibility so far as moving forward with this and disregarding the specifics they seem to be having a problem with.
I think the reason 2-aught might be a good start, it's just a starting point. And, you know, like I said, it's a non-uniform measurement, which blows my mind. But, you know, this saying it's a 2-aught gives them an idea of what we're thinking about and gives them a little more direction than just, you know, letting them shoot in the dark.
Well, that's Doug Cross again. But from what I'm hearing is that with the non-descriptive, non-uniform 2-aught, they're looking at more of a gap size to basically set these regulations up where they can measure it consistently and easily on a boat. It doesn't matter to me. I was just trying to make it easier on enforcement and trying to give it more of a universal language to start with.
Well, what might be appropriate then says where hook size relates to a 2-aught or larger. How about that?
Whatever, this is Doug Cross again, whatever y'all think. Y'all are more in tune on that than I am.
Pete, would that be an acceptable amendment?
Yeah, that makes sense.
Okay, and Tom, is that good for you for the second?
Yep, that's good for the second.
All right, okay. There you go. All right, we have a motion and a second. Any other discussion?
Commissioner Bizzle, or Chairman Bizzle, sorry, this is Steve Poland.
Yes.
Just real quick, I just had two clarifying questions. First, you know, based off the way the motion is written, it doesn't specify if this is just for commercial or recreational fisheries. Right now, it's everything. I just want to make sure that is the intent of the commission. And Second, and this is more of just a request on our end from the work group to help us be a little bit more efficient in developing this issue paper is, could the commission provide a little further clarification on what is the need or the problem that this is addressing? We took a little bit of liberty when developing the information paper that we just assumed it was to reduce dead discards, and I get the sense that yes, that's what it is, but an articulation from the commission that yes, that's in fact what it is, and that'll help us when framing the issue paper. Thank you.
Yeah, I think Pete and Tom, step on me if I'm saying the wrong thing, but I think the purpose of this motion is to reduce dead discards. And
correct.
Yeah. And what was the other part of your concern? I'm sorry. What's the first part of it? This is right at this point, gear period, but I understand Commissioner Blanton's concerned about the trot lines, and so we're going to have to do some looking into some exceptions on this. Like I said, this one rule won't take care of all situations in the best manner, so we're going to have to see what we have out there that needs to an exception be made to, which I have no problem with it. Okay, anything else? Okay, Laura, would you do a roll call vote, please?
Is Rob, can I chime in now?
Hold on. Who's that now?
Sam, this commissioner.
Yeah. There you go.
I'm just going to pose a question, and I know what we're all trying to do here. We're trying to minimize discards. I understand that. I'm just going to ask if we believe that this sounds like this is going to be a long process to figure out all the ins and outs and the particularities of this. And I'm just wondering if rulemaking is going to be the most effective way to accomplish what we're trying to accomplish. I mean, we're working with education. I think that's probably doing a good amount. And, we only have limited resources, and I just don't know if we shouldn't focus on that rather than focus on rulemaking. So this is just more of a comment, just because I can see where this is headed. I'm just worried about it wasting a lot of our resources and time. So.
Okay, thank you. Thanks for your comment concern. Okay, Laura, would you call the roll call vote, please?
Mr. Chairman, this is Sean Meyer. Can I pause you for just 1 second?
Yes, sir, you certainly may.
Just for the benefit of folks that may not have access to video and have audio only, can we get the motion read out loud one time?
I'll be glad to. Laura, why don't you read it out since you're going to be doing the roll call?
Okay. A motion by Pete Cornegie that the division develop an issue paper for rulemaking to require the use of barbless non-offset circle hooks when hook size relates to 2-aught or larger while using natural bait. In addition, barbs on treble hooks must be bent down. Seconded by Tom Roller.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Laura.
Okay.
And now we're ready for the roll call. Ready for the roll call. Yes.
Okay, Chairman Bizzle?
Aye.
Commissioner Cross?
Aye.
Thank you. Commissioner Blanton?
Aye.
Thank you. Commissioner Hendrickson?
Aye.
Thank you. Commissioner Cornegie?
Aye.
Thank you. Commissioner McNeil?
Aye.
Thank you. Commissioner Posey?
Aye.
Thank you. Commissioner Roller?
Aye.
Thank you. Commissioner Romano?
I abstain.
Thank you. So okay. That's 8-4 and 1 abstention.
Right. So the motion passes without dissension. Okay. Thank you all for that effort. Let's take just a 10-minute break, bring us back here at, say, well, I'll do you 11 minutes. We'll be back here at 11:30. If y'all want to, we might push on through a lunch break and go ahead and get this finished up. I think a lot of this stuff after lunch is going going to be relatively quick. Y'all be thinking about your pleasure on this, and if so, go ahead and grab your sandwich. So I'll see y'all back here at 11:30.